So in the 14th chapter, which is the Yoga of Guna, Guna Vibhag Yogaha, Sri Krishna introduces the subject by saying that this knowledge that I'm about to give you in this particular discourse of the 14th chapter is the one that great munis, great yogis, great scholars and meditators have reached the highest by practicing this knowledge. Not to say that this knowledge is the highest. The knowledge, highest knowledge we had obtained in the 7th, 8th, 9th chapter and also in the 13th. But as we had mentioned, this knowledge of the gunas is the foundation on which your knowledge of the self can be built on, can be structured. We are trying to study who is this self, this God, what is his nature. But when our own mind is not pure and it's not clear to us, what am I supposed to do with this life? How am I supposed to purify my mind? How am I supposed to live? How am I supposed to conduct myself at work, at home? When that is not clear to me, then I get confused and lost in the world. And then to talk about the self is so much higher. So they say, first you have to clarify in your mind, what is it I'm supposed to do? How am I supposed to live my life? What are the thoughts I should entertain? What are the qualities I should develop? So this chapter is a very practical chapter which tells us, answers all these questions. How should I live my life? What thoughts should I have in my mind? What qualities should I cultivate? So Sri Krishna says that applying this knowledge, you can then build upon it, the building, the edifice of the higher knowledge. And then in the third and fourth verse, he says that how the universe came into being, which we talked in quite detail last week for about an hour, how there was this unmanifest vasanas, which he called as Mahat Brahma, the unmanifest creator, Brahmaji, and when the spark of knowledge penetrated, how the whole beautiful world came about. And we do have a CD on that. If anybody is interested in knowing about how the creation came about, I have used a lot of examples and stories from Gurudev's teachings. So we have that CD available on creation if anybody is interested in getting that. I think that will help to clarify why this world was created, how it was created, who created it, what was the process of creation. So we had covered that last week. So now today, now Krishna is getting into the heart of the matter of what are the gunas. And we shall study that today. And not only today, but in the next few weeks, this subject will become very clear and you will realize how useful this particular chapter is in our life. So we'll do verse number 5, chapter 14.
Sattvam rajastama iti gunah prakriti sambhavaha nibbadnanti mahabaho dehe dehi namavyayam.
So sattva, raja, tama. Rajas and tama, these tamas, sattva, rajas and tamas, iti, these three gunas, where did they arise from? Prakriti sambhavaha. They came out of prakriti. We shall talk about that a little bit. And it says nibbadnanti, they bind. Who? O great warrior, he calls him Mahabaho. He uses different names for Arjuna. But here the word he uses is Mahabaho. Why does he use that? Mahabaho means a great warrior. Whenever he wants to remind Arjuna that what you have accomplished in your past, because Arjuna was a great warrior and he had lived an exemplary life of bravery and courage, and at one time he had actually defeated the entire Kaurava army single-handed. And so he says, you are a great warrior, Arjuna. You have conquered all the external enemies, but your internal enemy, the mind, that is where you have fallen apart. And see, that's what happens to us when we go out into the world. We can deal with the world's problems and deal with people and work and all. But my own mind, I have no control over. My mind just disturbs me and I get so agitated and somebody says something and I get so stressed out and I can't function and I get angry and then I say things. So that's what he's telling him. Oh, great warrior, the battle is now not external. The external battle, he knew Arjuna can win, but he said Arjuna was broken inside. And he said you need to fight this battle and get your mind under your control of your intellect. Right now your mind is running wild and just doing whatever it pleases. And because of that, you are broken, you are disturbed, you are unable to function. So, O great warrior, now turn your attention inward and conquer this inner enemy. Conquer the mind does not mean that you destroy it or overcome it, but bring it under the control of the intellect so the mind and intellect work together and lead you in the right direction. That's why he calls him Mahabaho, O great warrior. These three qualities, sattva, rajas, tamas, which are born out of prakriti, nibadnanti, they bind who? Dehe dehinam avyayam. This avyayam, this consciousness, immutable consciousness that we call as Om, or you can call as the Self, or that divinity that is within us, that is within and without, that is our true nature. It is bound. How can that be bound? He said it is avyayam, it is immutable, indestructible, and it seems to be bound, and that seems like a paradox. Because in the 13th chapter, he says that this self, you know, yatha sarva gatam sakshmyat akasham no palipyate, you know, just as the space is not bound, similarly, this consciousness that is there in all of us, it can never be bound, can never be caught. And here Krishna is saying it gets bound. How does it happen? How is it happen that even though somebody says, you say, I am that self, okay, if I am that self, Krishna says, no, if you are that self, that is your true nature. He says, then how did I get bound? How do I feel so tied up? How do I feel so lost? How do I feel so much problems in my world? If you can turn on that switch on the left, please, it's a little warm. You turn on the fan. No, up, yeah, the left. Yeah, thank you. So if I am that, then why am I not functioning as that? What is the difference between me and the saint? The saint seems to walk in the world free of all joys and sorrows, no matter what problems he or she encounters. Look at the life of Mirabai, look at the life of Jesus, Sant Gyaneshwar. All these great prophets and saints went through life and went through all the joys and sorrows cheerfully. Why am I not able to do that? Why do I feel so disturbed and so affected? So he says that will explain to you that in reality there is no bondage. It is your wrong understanding that causes this bondage. Today's talk, I probably might not be able to go to the next verse because I thought I'd like to give a little brief introduction on what is sattva, rajas and tamas, what are these three gunas, and how we function under the influence of these three gunas. If we have time, then we'll go to the next verse about sattva. But I thought this will give a good introduction on to the entire 14th chapter. So we'll spend some time talking about them. So what are gunas? Now, if you read any commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, they say that there is no equivalent word in the English language. There is no word, whether you read the commentary of, you know, Swami Chinmayananda, Eknath Ishwaran, Radha Krishnan. I have read some of multiple commentaries and they say there is no English word that explains the word gunas. Gunas is a very difficult to define word, but they have used it as forces, influence, qualities, climate. I've written somewhere climate. So these are the various, they're called the climates, they're called the forces, the influences, the qualities born of prakriti. Now, gunas are the qualities, the forces that decide how I function in the world, are the climates, are the occasions, are the subtle influences that decide how I function in the world. How am I functioning in the world? And it varies. It can vary from morning to evening to night. It can vary in different individuals. It can vary in the same individual different times of his life. In the youth, he may be different. In the middle age, he may be different. In the old age, he may be different. So, what is the predominant influence under which I am functioning at the moment is called my guna or my prakriti. Now, how are they born? They are born out of prakriti. Prakriti is matter. In the 13th chapter, Sri Krishna says, Yavat sanjayate kinchit satvam sthavara jangamam kshetra kshetrajna samyogat tad vidhi bharatarshava. O Arjuna, Bharatarshava, please know that yavat sanjayate kinchit, whatever has been created is born satvam, whatever being. Satvam here does not mean satva, means the being. Sthavara jangamam. Sthavara means stationary and jangamam means moves. So the plant also is a being, has life, but it is stationary. Plant doesn't move from one place to another, it stays in one place. But animal or bird or a fish or a human is called jangamam. It moves. So whether it is a moving or an unmoving life, how are they created? How are they born? Kshetra, kshetrajna, samyogat. We had studied in the 13th chapter, kshetra is the field, prakriti, and kshetrajna is the knower, the purusha. So purusha is the spirit and prakriti is the matter, is the substance. So when the matter and the substance come together, when purusha and prakriti meet, when kshetra and kshetrajna meet, then the beings are created, the live beings. Plants, animals, birds, fish and all. So they are born out of prakriti. So the matter, what is prakriti constituted of? Prakriti functions in the world through the three gunas. Sattva, rajas and tamas. So these are the qualities, these are the influences, these are the forces that determine my thoughts and correspondingly determine my actions. Because as I think, so I speak, and as I speak, so I act. So that is how these gunas were created. That is how the whole world came into being, as a combination of purush and prakriti. Prakriti being matter or the kshetra. So now there are three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. We'll talk a little bit about each. Let's talk about sattva. Sattva is knowledge, is purity, is indicated by the color bright. So sattva is the knowledge, purity, brightness. That is the highest guna. Rajas is denoted by passion, activity, the color red. And then tamas is inertia, ignorance, sleep, or denoted by the color black. As we said, they are also described as the climates under which I am functioning. Just as there is one piece of land, and if you happen to live on the East Coast and you go in December, January, it's covered with snow completely, it's white. And then when the spring comes, then suddenly flowers start blooming and then it looks very colorful. And then it rains and then you get the green, you know, trees and the foliage. It's so pretty. And then in the fall, when the leaves are changing color, you get the yellow and orange, all the beautiful colors. And then slowly the leaves drop and again the tree becomes brown and then gets covered with snow. So that same piece of land in different times of the year appears different, appears white and appears colorful, green and brown. So similarly, our mind under the influence of sattva, rajas and tamas, these three climates, appears different at different times. Like I wake up in the morning and say I have decided, okay, when I get up in the morning, I'm going to meditate for a while. or I'm going to do some chanting or some mantras or some prayers. So I sit down in front of the Lord, or I sit down in my room and I meditate and I chant and I say my prayers. My mind is in a sattvic mood, in a very pure mood, very, very calm, you know, and it's very clear at that time. Even if I have any problems, you know, the solution just comes to me as I meditate. And my mind is bright, it is luminous, it is full of, you know, knowledge, full of brilliance. And then I go out into the world and I start working. And then I come under the influence of rajas in passion and activity. And the red color represents rajas, where I am competing now in the world. I have to fight with people. I have to overcome them. I have to step on people's head to climb, because in the corporate world, it's a very, you know, it's a jungle out there. You know, all these words people use. And I have to overcome and I have to win at all costs. You know, winning is the only thing, number one, looking out, all these phrases that we use. So this person is out competing, cheating even others, even, you know, greed and jealousy and anger and hatred. Why did he succeed or why did she do better than me? So all these passionate, you know, tendencies come in the mind, you know, anger and jealousy and competition. And then I come home and I have worked hard and I'm so tired. You know, this. How was your day at the office, honey? Oh, it was terrible. My day was so bad. And so then I come and what do? I have a couple of, you know, glasses of wine. Ah, now I am mellow. Then I have my meal and then I go into sound sleep, tamas. And there I stay for 8-10 hours, you know, dead to the world. So in the same day, I went from sattva to rajas to tamas. Or there are certain individuals who are predominantly rajasic, tamasic, or sattvic. I think the majority of us come in the realm of rajasic, where we are rajasic. We are out in the world working and earning and competing. Yeah, obviously, we have some sattva mixed and some tamas mixed. Nobody's pure rajasic or pure sattvic or pure tamasic. But what is the predominant guna in most of us at this time? It is rajas. Why? Because I'm out working, I'm competing, I'm earning a living, I'm taking care of my family, I'm working, I'm cooking. And then, of course, we have some tamas, some laziness. Okay, once in a while, I don't feel like working today. I don't want to go to work. I just want to relax on the weekend, especially. Oh, weekend, you know, I just relax, do nothing. And I get weekend on the weekend. So, and then sometimes, you know, I may be in sattva, but there are certain individuals who are predominantly tamasic, who just say, I don't want to work. I just want to let the world take care of me. This reminds me of a little story. I told it on Thursday, so a couple of you who were here, so please forgive me, but it's a very interesting story. So there was this boat. There was these three men rowing the boat and going out there. And they had rowed the boat a little way out, and suddenly there was a thunder and lightning, and an angel appeared on the boat, and they were all shocked, you know, scared. So angel says, look, don't be scared. God is very pleased with you, and he has sent me to heal you, and all of you have some physical ailment, so I will heal you. So one man was bent over. His back was really, you know, bad and hunchbacked, and he just touched his back. His back became straight, and he was walking. No pain. He felt so good. Another one had very bad eyes, you know, advanced eye disease. He couldn't even see, but he had glasses with which barely he could see. So the angel takes those glasses, throws them in the river, and touches the water, and his vision is perfect. He can see 20/20. He says, oh, thank you, God. And the third one was on crutches. So the angel goes close to him. He says, don't come near me. I'm on disability. I don't want to lose my monthly check. So there are some people who are tamasic, you know, who want the world to take care of them. They don't want to work. They don't want to, and it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody who is on welfare, but somebody who is so rich. He says, my father left me millions. Now, why should I work? Let me enjoy life. And so he's spending his millions traveling and drinking, eating, and associating with the opposite sex and living in nice hotel. That is tamas too. Because you are taking from society, you are consuming without giving back. That's why our Chinmaya Mission Pledge says, giving more than what we receive. You know, we have to give the world more than what you take from the world. That is the way to live. To live intelligently, because the Lord and the creation has given us so much, it is our duty to give back. So a person who is just taking from society and not contributing is said to be tamasic. And then there are very few people, you know, like the Mahatmas and the saints and the wise people who we have the good fortune to meet here, like the Swamiji and Vimalji and all. When they come, then you see in them, you see knowledge, you see purity, you see brightness, because they are in that sattvic mood all the time. I mean, of course, they also have rajas. I mean, Swamiji also will be on the treadmill or he will be going for a walk. And obviously at night they have to sleep. So tamas has to come to, you know, to fall asleep. But even when they are working in the world, even when they are on the internet or even when they are dealing, like Gurudev, he used to work 21 hours a day. He would only sleep 3 hours at night. You might say that he has so much rajas. Yes, but his rajas was totally filled with sattva. His actions were not for himself. His actions were for others. So when I'm working unselfishly for the benefit of mankind, for the benefit of others, without even any question of praise or any question of, you know, getting anything back, that activity is called sattvic. So it does not mean that a sattvic person, maybe some people may just sit in meditation and just with their presence, they may bless the world. Like Raman Maharishi, even though he was a great saint, he would just stay in one place. And people would come by him and walk by him, and thousands of people came and they were blessed in his presence. But whenever these people act, they work for the benefit of all. They do not have the thought of I and my. And some of them are very active. As I said, Gurudev, Swami Chinmayananda work 21 hours. If you look at Swami Ishwaranandaji, how active he is. He's traveling all over the world. Guruji, the Swami Tejomayananda, who is the head of the mission, every week he is in a new country, in a new continent. So these people are working for a higher cause. They are working for their guru, working for the Lord. And so even when they are working, their activity is very pure. It is unselfish. So these are the three kinds of people. And as I mentioned, they, depending on the climate of their mood, of their mind, that's why it is also called the moods. The gunas are also called the moods of the mind. They work. Now, what is their desire and what is their will? How do they function? What is the difference between desire and will? A tamasic person has virtually no desire and no will, minimum. His only idea is, you know, little bit food I can get, some drinks, alcohol I can get, maybe a drug fix, you know, minimum whatever I need. Let me sleep. He say, you know, there is this opportunity. If you work, you can, you know, earn money and then you can take this vacation in the Bahamas. Who cares? Who wants to go? I want to just sleep. So he has no desire and he has no willpower. He has nothing. Theek hai, you know, let it be. The minimum I can do to maintain my life, if somebody brings me food, it's good. He won't even bother to go out and bring it. So he has absolutely zero desire and zero willpower, or very minimum. Enough just to barely maintain himself, because he's just living through life like a stone, like a log of wood. Then how about a rajasic person? Rajasic person has a lot of desire. Lot of passion, and I want to be the number one, I want to have millions of this, and I want to have millions of that, and I want to be the most successful, I want to have the best business, I want to be the CEO of my company. I don't care how many, you know, people I have to step over, how many people I have to cheat, no matter how many people I have to defeat, but I have to be the best. And so he has a lot of desire. He has the willpower to succeed, but the willpower does not match his desire. He has uncontrolled desire. He has will, but it still cannot keep up. It is like the the father is running and then the little son is trying to catch up. Sometime you see, you know, father is walking and the little son says, "Daddy, daddy, wait." But father is in a hurry. So willpower is trying to catch up with desire, but desire is uncontrolled. And so what happens to him? He overstretches himself. You know, he'll take on more work than he can handle. He will become a workaholic, work 14 hours, 16 hours a day. Not for the benefit of others, but for the benefit of myself. What can I get out of it? How can I become more rich? How can I become more successful? You're not saying that one should not work or one should not, but that should not be the overwhelming driving force in our life. It should not be I, me, and my, but how much I can give others, how can I help others. They have absolutely no idea of that. Their idea is just, you know, to make myself more successful. And so in the process, they overstretch themselves, you know, get stressed out, work too hard, and, you know, when it's 50, 60, they get a heart attack. Their credit cards are maxed out, you know, they have the money spread all over. And the tamasic, of course, he has no money, nothing, he doesn't care. But this guy has money, but he's so much spent, so much over it. He's all the time under stress because he has all these, you know, investments and then these, you know, places he has to, deadlines to meet. And we know that. In the corporate world, we see people like that. And how about the sattvic person? The sattvic person also works, but what does he do or she do? Reduce their desires. See, the desires are not for I or me, they are for others. So then automatically when the desire is reduced, and how do they increase their willpower? Through self-control, through living a life of self-control. I control my diet, I control my activity, I live a balanced life. Okay, so many hours of sleep, so many hours of, you know, activity, so many hours of rest, so much of reading. They eat in moderation, they live a life of moderation, they sleep, no, don't oversleep or don't undersleep. Sri Krishna says in the 6th chapter, one who sleeps too much or one who doesn't sleep at all, yoga cannot be accomplished by him. One who does too much or one who does nothing, one who eats too much or one who eats nothing. So living a life of moderation and reducing their desires. You know, I have enough clothes. Why do I need to go get a big more clothes? My house is comfortable. You ask them, you know, this Rajasic person, what are you doing? I'm building a brand new house. Is your old house good? Yeah, it is good. It has 5 bedrooms. How many are in your family? Well, we are just husband and wife. Kids already have gone to college. So you have a 5-bedroom house and you are 2 and you're still building a new house. Yeah, all my friends have, you know, the new house in Seven Oaks and I have to keep up with them. What will they say? You know? So unnecessarily increasing our desires. You know, getting a car I don't need. Buying more. Do I need more clothes? Do I need more jewelry? My jewelry is all lying in the safe. Why? Because there's too many robberies. I don't even wear the ones, but I still go to India and buy 3 new sets. For what? So I can again put them in the safe? So that is the problem. We keep increasing our desires, getting, and then for no purpose. And then at the time, ultimately you leave for who? For nobody. You know, when you die, who's going to? Nobody's even going to wear that jewelry. The children will say, it's old style, you know? Nobody. So a sattvic person reduces his desires and increases his willpower through self-control, through controlling his speech, controlling not only his actions but his mind. He keeps his mind peaceful and keeps his mind under his control through meditation, through prayer. The person increases the willpower and reduces the desire, so they become equal. In the tamasic, they are equal but they are low. In the Rajasic, the desire is too much, the willpower is not. The sattvic person, the desire and will are matched. So what he desires, he can accomplish. And his desires obviously are not for me or my. He's ever content. Sri Krishna says in the 12th chapter, Santushtam satatam yogi yatatma dridha nischaya mai arpita mano buddhihi yo mad bhakta same priya. He says, my yogi, my devotee is santushta satatam. He is always content, yatatma, and his mind is under his control. His dridha nischaya, his determination is firm, Mai Arpit Mano Buddhi. Why does he attain that? Mai Arpit Mano Buddhi. Shri Krishna says that my devotee, his mind is full of me, full of the Lord. Again, Krishna means anybody, whether it's Jesus or Ram or Shiva or Mother Lakshmi or Mother Saraswati, but his mind is always full of me, the Lord. Yo mad bhakta same priya. Such a devotee is dear to me. So that is the difference between a tamasic desire and will, rajasic, and a sattvic. Another place I heard a beautiful description. They said tamas, rajas, and sattva is like ice, water, and steam. Tamas is like a block of ice. It's just sitting there doing nothing. You know, it's cold, it is inactive, it is just sitting, you know, accomplishing nothing, just there. So tamas is like that, just sits there and does nothing. And then what happens, as Swami Vivekananda also said, he said, better than tamas is rajas. You know, even if you're doing nothing, okay, become greedy, become jealous, go out and rob a bank. He even said that. He said, it's better than sitting and doing nothing. So the point is not that it's okay to rob a bank, but it is better than sitting and wasting your life. So go out and do something, even if it is rajasic, even if you are working selfishly, even if it's to accomplish for me. Okay, that's better than at least being a drain on society and doing nothing. I go out and work for myself. So when ice melts, it becomes water. Now water flows. And so this rajasic person is flowing. And if the water becomes too much, say there is a big stream or a big rainfall, then that water is so strong it can take everything. It can even destroy villages, can destroy houses. So similarly, a rajasic person, when his energy is uncontrolled, then that energy becomes destructive. Not only for himself, he not only destroys his own life, his own mind, but destroys everything else. His whole family life becomes a mess, and the work environment. Why? Because he's so driven and he's telling his employees, come on, you have to work harder, produce more. I want to expand here. So it's like that uncontrolled water, which is driven to excess. But it says sattva is like steam. You cannot see it. You cannot see the sattvic person's power, you know, because he's so humble. Like, look at Jesus, or look at the life of Tukaram, or Narsimha Mehta, all these great saints. Even look at the life of Mahatma Gandhi. He looked so simple, and he had absolutely looked like a weakling. You know, he had no strength. So same as steam is very subtle, but it can drive a steam engine. You know, steam, when it is placed, it can drive an engine, has a lot of power. So this sattvic person may appear to be very weak as opposed to the rajasic, but he has so much inner strength of his own inner strength, which comes from the contact with the Lord, because he's always in contact with his inner self. So he can work wonders. He can drive a lot. He can accomplish a lot. He can do so much, appearing to do nothing, but it does a lot. Like steam, you cannot see it, but it has a lot of power. So that is how you can describe tamas, rajas, and sattva. So this brief introduction kind of gives a little background of how a sattvic, rajasic, and a tamasic person works. And in the next few weeks, we'll be expanding more on that, because this is just a very brief introduction. In fact, the entire chapter talks about how a sattvic person will work in the world, how a rajasic works, how a tamasic works, what is the result of sattva, rajas, and tamas, where does it lead to, what are the, you know, problems, and everything is, we'll be covering in more detail. But in the second half of the verse, Shri Krishna says, Nibadnanti mahabaho dehe dehinam avyayam. He says, I am that infinite self. And how can I be bound when I am that one self that is all over, all pervading? That is your true nature. Shri Krishna had already told Arjuna in the 13th chapter and in the 7th, 8th, and 9th that you are that. Then how do I get bound? So it says guna, the word for guna, another translation is also called rope. Gurudev in his commentary says, guna is not only the forces, not only the influences, not only the climates. Actually, that's the beauty of Sanskrit language, that the same word, depending on the context, has different meanings. So here guna means rope, as if binds. It appears to bind, but is not. We are not really bound, but we think we are bound. It is our misunderstanding. It is due to attachment and wrong identification. And there is a very, very beautiful story that I'll spend some time telling from Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda's commentary, where he talked about how we think we are bound and how, due to wrong understanding, we think we are bound. So there is this beautiful story. They said there were this trader, he had 12 camels. And so he was traveling in the desert. I mean, you must have heard it. Those who have heard Gurudev before, it's a very, very beautiful story. So there was this trader who had 12 camels, and he was traveling from one town to another selling his products. And all his camels were loaded with produce that he was going to sell. And every night he would stop in an oasis and he would stay there and, you know, feed his camels, get something to eat, find a place to sleep. And then next morning he would start, and that's how he would go on for a few days. Now, where did he secure his camels? Each camel had a rope and had a stake in the ground, a stick. So he would tie the, you know, at night, the camel, he would tie the rope around his neck, put the stick in the ground, hammer it, and so the camel, after he's fed, camel sleeps. It doesn't move because he's tied. And then the owner also goes and sleeps. And in the morning, he unties them, and then they all go on their next trip. So this one day evening, when he reached this particular small town, and he found this place where he could park his camels, he found that somehow that 11 rope and sticks he had, the 12th one had fallen from the camel's back. Somehow he didn't tie it. And so now this 12th camel didn't have a rope, didn't have a stick. So he was very worried. You know, camels are very valuable in Arabia, very expensive. And he says, you know, if I don't tie the camel at night, you know, the camel will walk off. It was late at night. The shops were closed. He couldn't buy rope, couldn't buy stick. So he was so worried and stressed out. You know, I cannot stay awake all night because I have to work the next day. Who's going to watch my camel? He's worried, worried. So this Mahatma, this wise person, is walking by. He says, oh, you look very disturbed. What's the matter? He says, sir, he bows down and touches his feet. He says, I need your advice. He says, what? He says, I have 11 ropes and sticks, but my 12th camel rope and stick is lost. He said, very simple solution, no problem. He said, what do you mean, no problem? He says, I'll tell you what to do. Tie all the 11 camels. So he ties the rope around the neck, hammers the stick, puts it in the ground. He said, what should I do with the 12th one? He says, do a pretend. Pretend to wrap a rope around his neck. And then to do that, he does that. He said, now pretend to tie it to the stick, and then pretend to bang the stick. So, bum, bum, with a hammer, he makes a lot of noise and ties the camel. He said, everything will be fine. Don't worry. The camel is not going to go anywhere. He said, are you sure? He said, yep, camel is bound. He said, he's not tied. He's free. He said, look, I'm telling you, camel knows he's tied. He said, okay. So, the guy goes to sleep, and he wakes up in the morning, and camel is sitting right there, all the 12. He said, this Mahatma is great. He solved my problem. And so now he said, okay, time to go. So he unties all the 11, unties the rope, takes the stick, puts it on the back, and then they all start moving. He says, the 12th one, move. The camel is not moving. He hammers it with the stick. Camel is still not moving. What's wrong with you? You know, you are not tied. Camel thinks he's tied. So then the Mahatma again is walking by. He says, what's wrong with you now? Why are you upset? He said, this stupid camel is not moving. He says, did you untie him? He said, no, but he's not tied. He says, yeah, he's not tied, but he thinks he's tied. Did you untie him? He said, no, I didn't. So, okay, untie him. So he pretends to pull out the stake and he pretends to untie the rope. Camel is happy. Camel gets up and starts walking. Now, you and I laugh at that camel, but we are not any better. We are not even 1% better than that camel. Why? Because we are actually not tied. We are not bound. We are immortal. We are that avyayam, immutable self. We think we are bound. we think we are attached. We think we are this body. You know, we identify due to wrong identification, and then once I think I am the body, then I get attached. I get attached to my relatives and my family and my children and my parents and my neighbors and my brothers and my sister. Then I get attached to my property and my wealth and my house and my job and my power. We are not saying that one should not have love, but to have that so much dependence that without this I am useless. You know, if I don't have my morning coffee, I can't work. That is attachment. You know, that is dependence. Or if I don't have this object in my life, or if I don't, some people, you know, after they're so attached to their work, they just don't have time. You know, you tell them, you know, why don't you come to the Gita class? Swamiji, I am so busy. I'll come after I retire. I have so much to do. He said, why do you have so much? Swamiji, you don't know. My business now, I'm trying to open a branch in China. Why are you opening a branch in China? Don't you have enough? Aren't you financially comfortable? Yeah, Swamiji, but I have to expand. I have to grow. I don't have time. Don't worry, Swamiji. After retirement, I'll come and do your work. Swamiji says, it's not my work. It is your work. If you're doing it, do it for yourself. I don't need. Swamijis are there all complete. He says, I don't need your help. When you come and work, it is for your own benefit, for your own growth. Swamiji, don't worry. Not this year, but next year I will definitely come to your mission. And I will come and work. And I will come and study. And I will come and meditate. I'll come and learn how to meditate. Swamiji, I have been meaning to do that. Okay, so next year Swamiji happens to pass by. He says, so how are you? He says, Swamiji, good, I am retired. Oh, you're retired? Good. You're going to start coming for meditation class? No, Swamiji, you know, I'm so busy. What happened? I thought you're retired. Ladki ki shaadi karni hai. I have to get my daughter married, you know. I am so busy in that. You know, next whole year, Swamiji, I have to plan the wedding. And my wife and I, we are so much, you know, you don't know, Swamiji, how much clothes we have to buy. And I have to go to India, buy jewelry. And okay, chalo, okay, ladki ki shaadi ho gayi. After 1 year of marriage, the child, daughter. Okay, now at least you can start coming. No, Swamiji, now she has a grandchild. And I have to go now take care of the grandchild and help my daughter and help. One after the other, we get attachments. We get, again, I'm not saying that we should not take care of our children or grandchildren. But I have to make time for my own personal growth, for my own evolution, for my own spiritual betterment. So that is called attachment, where you spend so much time in just doing that you have no time to sit and think. No time. They say just sit and do nothing. Just contemplate what I have heard in the Gita class. Let me sit for half an hour and think about it. Or let me just go by the river on Hart Park or go to some nature place and just sit and be with nature. Why? I don't have to do anything. I just have to be and go within. And feel the inner joy, that inner peace, that inner bliss. But we don't have time because I am so stressed out. And if nothing else, and I also have this bad habit, we'll just turn on the phone and just do nothing. Just check the email or check this or check that. Or just surf the net. Or, you know, I mean, things that you don't need to do. Unnecessarily just wasting our time. And if you have that extra time, use it to better yourself. To evolve spiritually, to learn more, to serve others, to help. That's what they say, that sattva has energy, but that energy is kept reserved, like, you know, a person who has a reserve account. And when he needs, he can channel that money to help. So similarly, the sattvic person has so much energy that it can channel it. So how do we do that? How do we decondition ourselves? How do we get out of this wrong identification? We'll be talking in the next few weeks. Today I'm just mostly going to talk about the problem, that why are we in trouble? Because we have this wrong idea that I am this body, mind and intellect, and this whole world is this objects, emotions, thoughts. We have no time to work on our vasanas, our negative tendencies. And obviously, we have no time to think about God. At the most, you know, 5 minutes quickly, I offer a light, a candle, or do a little aarti, and I'm gone. And the rest of the day, we don't have time. So through wrong identification, through wrong understanding of who I am and what is the nature of this world, and not knowing why am I on this earth, why have I appeared, as we had talked before, the only reason you are on earth is to realize. Like they say, no, location, location, location in real estate. So in human birth, it is realize, realize, realize. That is the only reason you have taken birth, is to realize, to become one with the self. Everything else you do is secondary. Whether taking care of my husband, my children, my wife, my work, my business, my money, all that is necessary. But that is secondary to my main purpose of realizing the truth. So they say, know the enemy within. Remember that the enemy, as Krishna had told Arjuna also, the enemy is within you, is not outside. The outer enemies you can conquer. So this knowledge of sattva and rajas and tamas is not, as I have talked before, is not meant to analyze others. You say, my husband, I think he has too much rajas. Maybe he should come to the Gita class, you know, then he might learn. I'll give him Gurudev's book. You know, so it's not meant to analyze others. If somebody needs, you know, asks you, give them the book. But this knowledge is not meant, it is meant for yourself. To analyze within yourself that what situation am I in now? Am I in tamas? Am I in rajas? Am I in sattva? Like when people are, you know, in a discussion group like that, they are in sattva. Maybe some of you may be in tamas. But at least majority are in sattva. And when you are, you know, thinking good thoughts and in good mood. And then when you are out in work, you have to have rajas to work. But that rajas should have an element of sattva mixed in it. It should not only be just for myself, but I dedicate even to the Lord, as I have said. Even when you are doing the dishes, you can say, why am I cleaning the dishes? Because the Lord is in my children. I see the Lord and their dishes I'm cleaning. So then even washing the dishes becomes a prayer, or whether I'm vacuuming or whatever work I'm doing, whether I'm working in my job or my business or my place of work, I see the Lord. So even when I'm working in the world, the rajas has to be mixed with sattva. So that's why they say that know the enemy within and constantly be aware of your mind. Is my mind right now in tamas? Is it in rajas? Is it in sattva? If it is in rajas and tamas, then I have to slowly, if I am in too much of tamas, if I am too much lazy, okay, they say get up and work, you know, even Swami Vivekananda said, Uttishtha Jagrata, even the Upanishad, Kathopanishad, I think you are studying on Tuesday, there is a very famous line, Uttishtha Jagrata, wake up and move, get up and move. So from tamas I go to rajas, and then slowly from rajas, I evolve to sattva, where I am working for the benefit of others. So they say, know the enemy within and know that the problem is not external, the problem is within me. So when you constantly become a witness of your mind, and that's what we learn in meditation, when we meditate, we practice that, observing the mind. And so that self-observation becomes my natural activity throughout the day. Throughout the day, even though I am working, but a part of me is watching my mind. Okay, what is my mind doing? Is my mind angry? Is my mind disturbed? Is it jealous? Is it lazy? Is it becoming selfish? And so I constantly, it's like, Gurudev calls it the 3 meters. You know, like in a radio. Nowadays, of course, we don't have that. But in the old radio where they had these dials you could turn. So one is for volume and one is for, you know, station. Another one is for the pitch, you know, the tone of the sound. So you constantly adjust your station. So you tune to the right station, the volume and the pitch of the sound. So when all the 3 are perfectly tuned, then beautiful music comes from the radio station. So similarly, when our 3 dials, sattva, rajas and tamas, are all tuned perfectly to the higher, then such a person is said to be in the highest state. So that is in brief a little introduction to these three gunas and how they function in us. And the last thing, I just want to give a little message from Gurudev in his commentary. Swami Chinmayananda says that bring a notebook. And what you do is in the notebook, write down on one page sattva and one place rajas, then one page tamas. And then write down, okay, in sattva, what are the, you know, like whatever we studied even today, what is his desire and will, what is the climate, water, steam. So these points, and it is knowledge, purity, brightness. So in one page you write everything about sattva that we will be discussing in the next few weeks. And then another page you can write rajas. Okay, in rajas, what is in rajas? There is passion, there is activity, there is selfishness. It's like water, it can drive, you know, all that. So you do that. And then in the third page, Gurudev says, tamas, you don't need to write because you all are there. He says, "You all, it's just your life story, autobiography. But still, if you want to write, you can write. Okay, tamas, that's me. So I am this, I am this. So he says, when you write down each week as you add to that, so at the end of this chapter, in the next few months, you will have a complete outline. Okay, this is how a sattvic person lives. This is what he does. This is how she functions. This is how, these are the problems, and this is the situation, and this is the result of sattva, and where I will go. And then rajasic person, this is how they live. And a tamasic person, this is how they function. This is what their end result is and how they suffer. So then it is like you have an entire summary of the entire chapter. So he says it's good to have a little notebook where you make three pages and write down. And, you know, if you wish to hear this talk again, if you don't remember, it is on firstpower.info. Tony always puts that. It's called firstpower.info. You can listen to the talk again in 3-4 days, or you can read Gurudev's commentary. Those of you who have Swami Chinmayananda's commentary, if you can just show that. This is the book that we have, 18 volumes, so you can get that from the office. And this has detailed much better than what I was able to explain. So that way you can have your own personal notebook. So that way it will be your understanding instead of what Gurudev says or what, you know, what I say. So make that your own knowledge and make that your own understanding, and then you can start applying in your life. So as we said, adjust the dial so that I have minimum tamas, minimum rajas, and maximum sattva, and slowly, slowly turn your mind higher. And then in the end of the chapter, Shri Krishna will tell us how to go beyond sattva even, because even sattva can bind you. You say, sattva can bind? I thought rajas was bad, you know, laziness, passion was bad, tamas, laziness, what? Even sattva can bind you. How? We'll talk next week. We'll be talking about that next week, about sattva. But we have about 5 or 10 minutes, so if people have any questions or any comments. Yeah, vasanas are the tendencies and gunas are its manifestation. Vasanas are unmanifest. Gunas are manifest. It is the same thing, but it is the unmanifest to the manifest. It's like the seed and the plant. That's a good question. Thank you.
Like what seed and?
Plant. Plant. Just as a seed you cannot see, but the effect of the seed is the plant. So the effect of the vasanas are these gunas. So vasanas are the latent tendencies, unmanifest. That's why they call it the causal body. It is the vasanas are the causal body which cause me to act. And then the gunas play in the mind. The gunas are in the mind. So the vasanas are the unmanifest, subtle tendency. That's why in the last week when he talked about creation, he said that the total vasanas, which he calls Mahat Brahma, when my light of consciousness penetrates, then the whole being comes into it. The whole world comes into play. Oh yeah, that's a good one. We'll be coming to that later on. Are you ahead? Have you moved ahead or you're already?
No, this is his introduction.
Yeah. Okay, that's a very good question. What is the difference between unactivity and inactivity? Activity we know, rajas, you know, that we know. But tamas and sattva appear very similar. A tamasic person also sits and does nothing. And a saint sitting in meditation also is sitting and doing nothing. So they say, well, they are both the same. But one is inactivity and one is unactivity. Inactivity is out of laziness, out of, you know, indolence, out of ignorance. But unactivity is that the person does not feel the need to just go out and work uselessly. See, a rajasic person, if he has nothing else to do, if he's driving, he won't just drive. He will turn on the radio. He will keep flipping the channels. Then he will be playing music on the, you know, then when he stops at the red light, he will quickly take out his phone and text somebody. So he's doing so many things at one time. A tamasic person doesn't even take the car and go anywhere. A sattvic person will just focus on what he's doing. If he's driving, he'll just drive peacefully. So it appears that he's not doing anything, like a person sitting in meditation, or like an artist, you know, who is thinking and contemplating about a painting, or a writer who is going to produce the next masterpiece. He's sitting and thinking, you said this guy is wasting his time, you know, he's unactive. No, he's not unactive. His mind is very creative. All creativity comes out of silence. If you want to create anything new, you cannot do it out in rajas. You have to do it when your mind is quiet, whether it's Thomas Edison making the light bulb, or, you know, Archimedes with his, you know, principles of, you know, the, when he ran, he's saying, Eureka, Eureka. When your mind is quiet in that silence, all, whether it's a piece of music, like a new creative piece of music, they all come out of silence. When the person is sitting quiet and doing nothing, that's when his mind is active and creative, and all great creativity comes out of that. So it is unactivity, but in reality, there is a lot of energy that is being stored for doing some great job. That's the difference between inactivity and unactivity. That's a very good question. Thank you for asking. So you understand. So he appears to be unactive, but he's maybe creating. He's creating the next masterpiece. Or he's thinking about, like a Mahatma thinking about giving his discourse. So he's sitting and thinking, okay, what am I going to tell thee? You may think he's sitting for half an hour doing nothing, but he's creating the talk that will benefit so many people.
It also sounds like action in inaction and inaction.
Inaction, right, exactly. That's what in the ninth chapter, yeah. Same thing, yes. It appears that he's doing nothing, but in fact, he is creating so much. He's helping. Yeah, planning, all the good things, important things happen only out of sattva. When you are busy working, you don't have time to think or create anything new. So yeah, so that is unactivity versus inactivity. What he means is that this psychology and psychiatry is still very infant, in an infancy. The rishis 8,000 years ago had gone so much beyond that they are nowhere clear to that, because they are still only at the level of the mind. They're only working at the level of the mind and trying to give drugs and trying to psychoanalyze and trying to treat. So they are very basic. So our rishis went beyond the mind to the intellect, beyond the intellect to the vasanas, and ultimately to the self. So psychiatry, it's because they're just trying to control with drugs, you know, trying to give them more Prozac. If Prozac doesn't work, give two other drugs or three other drugs. So yeah, so that's what, so they're still in their infancy. What all this Freud's thinking and all is very, very infantile. So you have to go beyond this to the gunas under which the individual functions. And so Gurudev says that by this knowledge, you can analyze your own mind. You can analyze your own, and you don't need to go to a psychiatrist. That's the idea. Right, but still at the mental level. You're not going to the intellectual and to the vastness. You have to go to the unmanifest tendencies and why this person is acting like he is. So his point is that if you're only focusing on the mind, then you are still at the... You have to go, ultimately go to the subtle tendencies, what vasanas he was born with, what are his gunas under which he is functioning, and teach that person to analyze himself and know that right now I am in tamas, right now I am in rajas, and how I can evolve to sattva. So you can teach that person to cure himself. Then he does not need a psychologist or a psychiatrist. He does not need to pay $50 an hour and lie on a couch. He can just do that. So that is his idea. That's why he says that. Yeah, it's not... He actually says in one place, he says that psychiatrists will think that I'm trying to put them out of business. So it's not that, but his point is that we just focus on the surface of the disease. We don't go to the cause. And unless you treat the cause, you're just treating the symptoms, you will never conquer the disease. Yes. Yeah. Like you're swimming on the surface of the waves. You're not going to the depth of the ocean. You're not going to enjoy the depth of the ocean if you just swim on the surface. So similarly, modern, they have to go to the tendencies. Go deep within. That's what he's saying. I know, because psychologists and psychiatrists don't like what he says, but I think, you know, his point is that right. With this knowledge, you'll become a better psychologist, see, or a better psychiatrist. If you apply this knowledge in your work and yourself first stay in sattva, not in rajas or tamas, but when I'm working, and we'll talk about that next week, how a sattvic person works in the world. So stay yourself in sattva, then you can bring out the sattvic in others. So yeah, I think this will become more clear as we go along. But that's a very good point. Right. Right, right. Where he calls him a great Mahabahu, a great warrior, that means you are that. You know, you are actually greater than what you give yourself credit for. Yes. No, throughout he's encouraging him and yes, yes. And then sometimes we call it, you know, Bharatarshava. You are the greatest of the Bharata family. So implying that you have it potential in you to be the best. Yes. That's the role of a good teacher, is to encourage the student. Okay, just a couple of announcements. We have our annual seminar that we do every year at Memorial Hospital. It will be on May 10th. On Saturday. It's a very, very good seminar. Those of you have attended, it's from 7:30 to 12. We have breakfast and, you know, we also provide snacks. And it's free to all, and there is no charge. And the topic this time is healthy living. Healthy living and through a holistic and a modern approach. So we have Ayurvedic practitioner. She's coming from San Jose, Priyanka Vaidya. She'll be talking on the holistic, and then Dr. William Baker, who is an internist, will be talking on the modern approach to health. And then Swami Ishwaranandaji will talk from the spiritual aspect, how you can live healthy from a spiritual aspect. It's on Saturday, half day. There is no charge, and for physicians and nurses and psychologists, they have CEU credits available. So the flyers are outside. You can take them. Or those of you who are on the email list must have got my email. So please go to that. And most likely will be confirming by email, but Priyanka ji, who is coming, who is the Ayurveda teacher, she will be doing a talk on healthy cooking. We have healthy living during the day, but Friday evening, she'll be talking on healthy cooking. That will be here. The Saturday seminar will be at Memorial Hospital. It won't be here, so Saturday will be at the hospital, but Friday evening, we might have a talk. On once it is confirmed, we'll send you an email or let you know next week, so you can plan on coming here. And she will give you tips on healthy cooking and all that. Also, we have the CD on creation. If you want to hear about creation, you're welcome to take that. And we'll see you next week. Thank you very much. Thank you. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma kaschetukha bhagbhavet. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.